WNYC Studios is supported by the Brennan Center for Justice, presenting The Failed Experiment of Mass Incarceration. This virtual event on Wednesday, April 17th at 3 p.m. will feature criminal justice advocates and contributors to the new book, Excessive Punishment: How the Justice System Creates Mass Incarceration. They will discuss why the American approach to criminal justice is so punitive and how reforms would prioritize human dignity and restoration over retribution. Find more information and register for this event at brennancenter.org/events.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and earlier this month we had Professor Robert Cherry, economics professor at Brooklyn College, on the show to talk briefly about his new book, written with Robert Lerman, called Moving Working Families Forward, Third Way Policies That Can Work. And this third way is a subject that caught our eye. Between the left and the right, one way or another, there's an alternative that he says both sides can agree on in some policy cases, and which could actually benefit working families, defined by Professor Cherry as families making less than $70,000 a year, definitely not in the 1%. So we invited him back on the program to talk in a little more depth about two ideas from his book, Narrowing Racial Earnings Disparities and How to Improve Community Colleges. Dr. Cherry, welcome back to WNYC.
Well, thank you for having me.
How do you frame racial disparity in earnings? It's something that we all know exists. How do you come at it?
Well, I think that we've moved past where there are conscious, intended discriminatory effects in hiring. Certainly, you can find examples of that. But what's much more the case is that there are informal mechanisms, there are procedures that firms use where they're lazy, uninformed, and they don't mean to be discriminatory, but the fact is the processes that they use for hiring lead. So that the approach in the book is to look at this broad group of hiring that particularly takes place among non-four-year graduate labor markets and see ways to informing and cajoling these employers to do the right thing, which in many ways they're quite willing to do.
So what are some of those things in your third way proposals?
Well, some of them have to do with the use of formal credentials that they can often be overstated. The overuse of informal networks where you tell your employees, tell me if you know anyone who might want this job.
Because if most of the employees are white and they mostly know other white people, then it's going to self-perpetuate.
Sure, and it isn't that he doesn't want to hire blacks, but this is a simple thing to do. And he will get qualified applicants because employees are not going to recommend somebody who's going to mess up. So, but there's also biases inherent in interviews. It ends up that interviews, for many people, they look at things that signal the biases or the stereotypes that they have, and that sometimes using more formal testing may get further. The whole, particularly for African American men, the whole way that criminal records should be used, there are very constructive ways to change the timing at which those are looked at that have been proven to increase the hiring of people of African American men with some criminal records.
Or without, because I gather the stat is about a third of young black men have criminal records, but you note that employers sometimes admit to having a bias against black male applicants because they apply the stereotype of criminality across the board, whether there's a known record or not. So if I understand your suggestion correctly, you're proposing more background checking, not less, correct?
More, but the timing is important. It ends up if you allow someone to go through the process And only at the end we say, look, this applicant seems like he's going to be or she's going to be really good. And then when you look at the criminal record, you say, oh, he has a criminal record. But you might ask what the context is rather than if you do the screening at the beginning, you just check off this is someone with a criminal record. You know, we have 73 applicants. Let's just eliminate this person.
Which gets into what you call ban the box procedures.
Right. Well, that's what it's called. Probably 20 or 30 municipalities in the country use that quite effectively.
What does that mean? Ban the box?
Ban the box means that you don't put on the initial application, do you have a criminal record, where you check on the box that you have one and you're checked out the door. You know, I wouldn't mind talking a little bit more broadly about teen joblessness, which certainly affects young people and has an impact on the educational system for moving people forward. And if your listeners came away from this radio with one image that's imprinted, it's the notion of teen joblessness being a silent cancer. It ends up that there's been a collapse of teen employment in the last decade from 50% of 16 to 19-year-olds employed to 30%. For African Americans, it's been from 29% to 14%.
Now, are you talking about high school dropouts and non-college high school graduates?
I'm talking about all 16 to 19-year-olds because—
Whether they're in school or not.
Whether they're in school or not. And the reason why, you know— Only one of seven African-American teenagers have paid employment at any point in time. And I think it's a silent cancer for a number of reasons. One is that the traditional concern is students should only be working in the summertime. So when summers come and you see these statistics, there's some discussion. But it instinctively is looked at as something that should be frowned on because youth should spend as much time as possible on education so that we don't think about it. But it's cancerous because for many young, particularly disadvantaged kids, employment is crucial for them to move ahead and not move back.
Brooklyn College economics professor Robert Cherry, co-author of a new book, Moving Working Families Forward, Third Way Policies That Can Work, Third Way kind of between left and right, co-authored with Robert Lerman. We're going to get into the community colleges aspect of your book for our last 10 minutes or so. And listeners, if you want to chime in on this, anything that you have in mind, if you have experience with community college, either as a student or a professor or an employee, that you think can improve them, whether it's through remedial education or otherwise? Where does community college fit in? Where can it fit in reducing the wage disparity between, let's say, the 1% and the 99%? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And you enter your community college discussion, I guess, not so much as a success story as a lot of people casually think of it. Oh, look at all the folks going to community colleges and getting trained in work skills, even if they're not going on to four-year liberal arts degrees or whatever. But you see, and you like that idea, but you also see problems with community colleges.
Yes, and again, getting back to these teens, for many of them, occupational training is the ticket to not only them developing important networks in the workplace and developing the soft skills that they need, but also in keeping them in school so that many of my left liberal friends just are uncomfortable with the idea of directing educational resources more into this area of occupational and training, where there can be links between high schools and a series of programs, career technical programs, career academies, and occupational programs in the community college. They're incredibly focused on giving everyone the opportunity for a four-year degree. And that's where I think, particularly in places like New York City, where you're getting such an increasing share of students into the community colleges who come in with almost non-existent skills.
What happens to the racial disparity there? Since many Black and Latino students go to community colleges, I think disproportionately, do you worry about creating a two-tiered college system that's also divided by race?
Well, we already have a two-tiered system. That is, those who complete the 2 years and those who don't. That if you look at the racial breakdown of the ability to go on to the four-year college, there's an incredible racial disparity. And yes, if some, we would like to see better students coming into the system, but I think if there was more of a focus on occupational programs, which, by the way, pay a quite decent salary often, 60% of the people with two-year degrees make more than the lower quarter of four-year graduates. So a two-year degree is not a consignment to dead-end poverty jobs.
And it sounds like there's a lot of money being wasted on junior and senior year.
For many students, there is. And the idea that somehow if we could eke out these four-year degrees for these weaker students, that they have a ticket to a much higher level. You know, there are people in this lower quarter of the four-year graduates who could have done much better with a two-year degree.
Arlene in Middletown in Connecticut. You're on WNYC. Hi, Arlene.
Hi there. My comment speaks to the community colleges. I have two sons. One, we had him go straight to Connecticut University. The other one, we learned our lesson, and we started his four classes at the community colleges for funding purposes. However, the community college was very unclear in how the curriculum worked and how we can take those classes and move them over to the university, to the four-year college. So we ended up having our son spend an extra semester in school, and I understand that most kids that go to community colleges end up spending more than just the 2 years there, because it's really unclear the way the curriculum works.
Have you seen that?
Well, community colleges are incredibly understaffed and overwhelmed by the influx of students that they have, and they're really not geared to giving counseling, to doing the kinds of things that would much more direct students. And I don't know about her children, but this is particularly the problem for the 75% of students who come into CUNY who fail at least one of the basic skills, 25% of whom fail all three of the basic skills exams. So,
plus, not everybody's a full-time student.
Yes.
So then it also takes more than 2 years if people are working. Joseph on Long Island, you're on WNYC. Hi, Joseph.
Hey, Brian, how are you?
Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment how, I actually transferred from a four-year school to community college and then back to a four-year school, just finished law school. But I just wanted to comment how many friends that I knew from high school ended up going to Nassau Community College on Long Island, one of the biggest community colleges in the area, and ended up dropping out after the first semester or the first year.
Why?
Basically, just thinking this was 13th grade. You know, this is terrible. This is the one I want. You know, I can't take these math and these entry-level classes anymore. Some of them ended up, you know, going into construction and other fields. A lot of them, never continued. But I could also definitely attest to the large amount of, you know, African-American and Latino students, you know, friends that I have that just totally did not feel they were being directed in any way and just pounded with these kind of classes they thought were just an extension of high school and totally, just felt alienated from the whole thing.
What did they do? What did all these folks do when they dropped out?
A lot of them, you know, were able to go into other jobs. A lot of them, you know, I lost contact with, but I know, and I know from my own experience, you kind of get bombarded with these kind of classes, which I personally think would be much better to, you know, push people into more skills and more, hands-on training,
right,
rather than people who are already dissatisfied with high school now dumping them with a bunch of, you know, entry-level math and, you know, world right. history and these classes that people feel like, you know, I thought college, I was going to get away from this.
Joseph, thank you. Important point in your opinion, Professor Cherry?
Sure it is. I mean, it just, I think, verifies that there should be a rethinking of this college for all mentality that I think people on the left are very comfortable with. They're very uncomfortable with the idea of occupationalism because it harkens to a kind of tracking that was widespread 20, 30, 40 years ago. And they should really be rethinking. And certainly the Gates Foundation has put a lot of money in trying to get this refocusing to occur.
And when you recommend going back even further from community college to high school to look at roots of the problem, you mentioned something called the Carpe Diem program. What's that?
Well, that's a program that tries to link up occupational training in the high school, what we traditionally call vocational training at the high school level, with the community college so that they are linked up with firms and trainings. They get some credits, up to 12 credits, towards an occupational program at New York Tech. And so it pulls in students who are much more at risk of dropping out of high school, and they, in fact, then go on to the community college and are able to be reasonably successful in getting a two-year degree. But it gives them the kind of soft skills and the networking that is really very important for many immigrants particularly.
We have 30 seconds left to put this in the context of today's news. Do you think there's something in the president's jobs bill that moves us in the directions that you think will really help reduce the various wage gaps and get more people prepared for the workforce? And do you think there's something represented in the Occupy Wall Street movement that's relevant or important?
I can do that in 20 seconds.
You have to. Unfortunately, you have to.
No, I think that there's not this kind of focus on this lower end, and particularly the disadvantaged population in that lower end, and what can move them forward. I mean, I would love everyone to get four-year degrees and become professionals, but we have to be realistic.
Robert Cherry, Brooklyn College economics professor, co-author of Moving Working Families Forward, Third Way Policies That Can Work. Thank you very much.